This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Don Metter, the 2010 FFPC main event champion and winner of more than $100,000 in his high stakes career. In this episode, we discuss why he avoided underperforming first-rounders this year, the future of running backs in fantasy football, and how he has once again managed one of his teams to the brink of the top 10 overall in the 2017 FFPC main event. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champion David Hubbard, the winner of the $250,000 grand prize in the contest, along with his co-manager Nelson Sousa. Hubbard breaks down how his waiver bids went after week one, who he targeted this week on the wire, and how he is treating T.Y. Hilton sans Andrew Luck. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it supports the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, David Hubbard. First big waiver run of the season took place last Wednesday after week one. Tell us how your day, because I know you've told us before that you and Nelson are usually constantly on the phone the entire day on a waiver day. Tell us how that day went, what players you ended up getting in a lot of your leagues.
Yeah, it's a nightmare as usual with this many teams trying to get all the waiver work done. And like was said before, it starts like on Sunday, and it's a constant progression all the way to Wednesday night at 9, and then we're scrambling at the last minute to adjust bids and decide if that's actually what we want to do on any particular week. But last week we got a little Andre Ellington. We got some Buck Allen. I'm trying to remember Paul Richardson a little bit where he was available, and Marcus Wheaton some, speculating what he looks like when he comes back. Picked up Josh Gordon a few times to see if what the NFL decides on that deal, and which is coming up shortly. They're going to make a decision on that, so that'll be interesting. That's pretty much who we targeted and who we got.
You always want to be ahead of the curve, especially at this level of competition. I think you have to be. I felt better about my Ellington bids when I found out that you and Nelson were actually going after him, so that made me feel good about my bids that I got him in a few leagues.
Yep, I hope it works out. We'll see. He's going to be an interesting guy, depending on how that team's a mess, but I think he has the most upside out of any of those backs, so that's why he was on my radar.
Yeah, definitely. A guy that they had moved temporarily, at least, to receiver in the preseason, moved him back to running back. So you know he's got the pass-catching chops. I talked with Nelson on the show last week, and I said how typically or historically when you guys have worked together, you typically are much more aggressive with your waiver bidding earlier in the season, where he's a little bit more reserved. And he actually said, well, this year it seemed to flip-flop where you almost were a little bit more conservative and he wanted to spend the dough on the free agents. Whose philosophy won out last week? Are you guys more aggressive or more conservative by and large?
It was kind of a mixture. We spent some money on some guys and we saved some money on some guys, I think. I think we did a good job as far as that goes, because historically I've been really horrible on the waiver wire. If I see a guy I want early, I'll just spend a bunch of fab money, and a lot of times I overbid. So we've worked on getting better in that. It's hit or miss. Some guys will complain, oh, they got that guy by a buck. Well, we've also lost people by a buck many times. So it works both ways. And historically, I've been more aggressive. But, yeah, the first week, Nelson wanted to fire some money on a lot of guys, and we did fire some money. And then there was one guy that I wanted to fire a little more money on, and we fired money on him. So it was kind of a give and take the first week, and worked out well.
More than a couple big injuries this week, but the two significant ones I want to talk about, Greg Olsen goes down for Carolina, and for Green Bay, you have Jordy Nelson now being mentioned as a game-time decision for a late game on Sunday, as well as Randall Cobb getting an MRI done on his shoulder today. Now, we probably won't know the results of that. At least we don't know the results on the MRI as of yet at the time of this recording with Cobb. Now, it sounds like he's probably going to be okay. It sounds like Nelson is, dodged a bullet. But again, by the time the waiver goes off this week, we will not have the necessary information to make an informed decision about the Packers receiving core. So Geronimo Allison is out there in a lot of leagues. Who stands to gain more this week? Allison stepping up for potentially Nelson and Cobb, or Devin Funchess, who actually got a few more targets after Olsen went down this past weekend?
Allison's an interesting guy. It's funny you mentioned him. I was thinking about him today. He could definitely, Rodgers likes that kid. Every time he's in the game, I mean, he targets him. So Allison is definitely an interesting guy. Funchess has the opportunity to do more now that Olsen's on the shelf. And injuries are a funny thing. They work against you and work for you in fantasy. Olsen and Jordy are two guys we don't own at all. Out of all the teams we drafted, we own them 0 times. And then last week, Allen Robinson, we got felt like we were getting a gift on him in the 5th round. Well, it wasn't much of a gift because he lasted one play. So injuries are a funny thing in fantasy. They can work for you and work against you. David Johnson, we were happy to have a lot of shares of David Johnson. Well, that didn't work out so well. That's why I kind of laugh every time these guys get on the message board and complain about, hey, I didn't get the first pick or I wasn't in the front end of the draft. Well, that might be a blessing in any given year. You got to take it with a grain of salt. And if you got the first pick now and you had one team and you drafted David Johnson, well, you're fighting an uphill battle all year, where if you got the back end and you drafted decently, you might have a shot to win the league. So it's a
Yes,
give and take.
it's all about trying to maximize your potential, and certainly it looked at the start of the season like you wanted the number one pick to get David Johnson, but I think that you're going to see a lot of teams who didn't have the number one at the top of many leaderboards right now. Final question for you, David. We want to talk some Colts here. Andrew Luck already been ruled out week 3. This early in the season, or excuse me, this early in the week does probably not bode well for him for the next couple of weeks. But as we look at this Colts offense and how this Luck injury ends up affecting everybody, T.Y. Hilton obviously comes to mind since he was the highest drafted Colt according to ADP in the FFPC. T.Y. Hilton usually going 3rd, 4th round, somewhere around there. What's your best guess for, and I don't even know, maybe you don't own a lot of T.Y. Hilton, but what's the best guess for the teams that you do own Hilton on, as far as a percentage goes? How many of those teams are you going to be firing up T.Y. Hilton with Jacoby Brissett throwing to him again this week?
It was kind of funny. I figured Luck would be that Colts would play safe with him, and it'd probably not be six weeks before he plays. And I'll be surprised if he doesn't play. I think he will play this season, but they're being ultra cautious with him, which they should be. It's funny. We were going to fade the Colts altogether actually this drafting season, and then T.Y. Hilton started going in the middle of the 4th round, and so we do have a few shares of T.Y. Hilton. And Jacoby Brissett is an interesting guy with Hilton. He has a stronger arm, so I don't feel this week especially. I don't feel any caution with throwing T.Y. in a lineup. I'm sure T.Y. will be in some of the lineups that we own him. Now, if we have some significantly better options, of course we'll bench him. But T.Y. will definitely be in some of our lineups this week. I'm not afraid of him at all this week.
Now, don't be afraid of the guy you drafted early. So certainly T.Y. Hilton is a guy that before you bench him, think long and hard about what you're doing. We will think long and
Sure.
hard about everything you told us this week, David. I certainly appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. Good luck to you, man, not only in the waiver wire this week, but in week 3 in general.
Thanks, Mark. I enjoyed talking with you again.
Thanks to David Hubbard for his input this week. Now here's 2010 FFPC main event champion Don Meador giving us the high stakes lowdown. Don, when you are not playing high stakes fantasy football, tell the listeners what you do for a living.
I for the last 24 years thereabouts, I've been a financial advisor at a big Wall Street firm.
And it's always important as a financial advisor to know when to buy low, sell high, get the best value, and certainly skills that you can put to use at the fantasy football draft table as well as the waiver wire, right?
Absolutely. Drafting for me, drafting especially the whole value situation is it is very important way of thinking.
Well, okay, first of all, you are off to a great start. We're only, 2 weeks into the season. But I do want to talk about this team that you have in the top 15 of the FFPC main event. Out of 1,440 teams, you're currently in 13th place. When you look back on this specific draft, Don, how well did things fall into place for this draft? Where, I mean, did they go according to plan? Were there any curveballs? Or when you looked at this team when you're done, you're like, you know what, this is a strong squad. I will go to battle with this squad.
Well, first thing, you know, I never go in with a strategy. I know a lot of guys I talk to, they'll sit there and say, in the second round, I'm going to get this guy or this position, and then in the third, I'll follow it up with that. I don't do that because I'm with 11 other owners, and who knows who they like. They might take a guy early. I learned a long time ago, if you like a guy, take him. So a lot of guys might move sooner, later. You never know. So I really draft, as I answered initially, it's all value-based. And I look at the board. If I see value at a certain spot, I've been known in the past to take four running backs out of my first four picks. And other times I don't draft one until the seventh. It's just how the value of the board lies. But to answer your last part of that question, yeah, when I got done and I looked at that board, I said, you know, we always use those two words, barring injury. But I just thought it was a strong, strong team, top to bottom, a lot of flexibility.
You know, I have to ask you, too, when you say that you're looking at strictly value when you go into it, when you know where you're drafting in the first round, do you have a general idea of a player or two that you're targeting there? Or is it simply like you really don't know exactly what you're going to come up with until you're on the clock?
No, you know, I'm pretty – the first pick is usually – you know, this year was easy because I picked two, and then in the other league I picked five. So it was pretty easy. You kind of knew the consensus top five or six. It gets a little more involved when you're down at 11 or 12 because you really don't know what will fall to you. And especially this year with the whole Ezekiel Elliott situation, last year I think it was Le'Veon Bell. You know, there's always some curveballs that are thrown in there. But generally the first round, I'm pretty decent. And I will tell you, the thing that helps me a lot is I'll do a lot of the $35 satellite leagues as the preseason progresses. And that's really where I do the lion's share of my homework these days. And that's how I do it.
One of your early round picks in this main event draft, Todd Gurley, was a big first round bust for a lot of people last year, and myself included. I was a little skittish on drafting him early again this year. Yet you take him early on in your draft this year, and he seems to be bouncing back in 2017. Tell us why you were a believer in Todd Gurley this season.
Well, first of all, it's funny you bring that question up because as I sat looking at the draft board, and I can't remember who the player was that went right before it. It might have been Travis Kelce, who I was going to take. And, again, I looked at the draft board, and Kelce was gone, and I knew the receivers I wanted would be there. And I kind of took a giant sigh, and I just, you know, kind of let it out, and I went running back Todd Gurley. And everyone on my side of the table just started laughing because it was the worst endorsement of a pick you could ever find. But the answer on why I took him and why I liked him really didn't have to do so much with being a believer in Todd Gurley. It was more being a believer in the ineptitude of Jeff Fisher. And I thought you have a young new coach, vibrant, 30-some years old, knows the game, knows the nuances, the new style of the game. It's not 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Let's see what he can do with this obvious talent. And so far here, they put him in space. They do all these things with him. It looks like he's revitalized, and I think a lot of that has to do with coaching.
Yeah, talent is definitely taking over here, and perhaps he just needed the right general to make sure that his talents are being put to use properly. One of the guys, you know, as I was doing this show and I was doing some high-stakes fantasy football shows throughout the summer, especially when we got to late summer, Jamison Crowder was a name that kept coming up over and over again as a player that a lot of high-stakes players liked, and he was moving up, as you can probably tell from doing those $35 draft experts. He started moving up in mid to late August, a round or two, and his stats so far this season, again, small sample size, we're only 2 weeks in, his stats have not backed up that rise up draft boards. How concerned are you about Jamison Crowder on this 13th place main event team that you have right now, and Jamison Crowder in general, really?
You know, in general, I am concerned, and I will tell you, I drafted him because of a blurb I read. I pay attention to coach speak, and, you know, when I read Gruden say back in July, we need to get him the ball. He's on the field all the time. We need to focus him. They lost their two receivers the first time ever in the NFL that a team lost 2,000-yard receivers. I thought to myself, here's a chain mover. This will be 7 to 8 carry or 7 to 8 touches a game. So far, it hasn't happened. I'll give him a break week one. He had a bad hip, was on the injury report all week. Last week they ran for about 240 yards. So obviously, you know, maybe he's more of a game plan dependent guy. And if that's the case, so be it. I mean, I drafted him in the fifth round. I thought it was fair value where I got him. And I think his numbers will still be there at the end of the year. But, you know, he'll be more of a matchup-driven guy, I think, than anything else.
Well, Mark Ingram is a guy who is also on this squad for you, Don. I want you to look into your crystal ball here. Tell me what you see as far as the rest of the season goes, not only for Ingram, but his backfield mates in New Orleans, Alvin Kamara and Adrian Peterson.
Bulky, there are some things in life that make you just scratch your head, and the Saints signing of Adrian Peterson is one of it. He obviously does not fit that system. He doesn't fit that coach. He doesn't fit anything about that team. So he never really concerned me too much. Alvin Kamara being a rookie, you know, here, Mark Ingram at the end of the year, they've thrown other guys at him. They've had Darren Sproles. He's shown that he can coexist in a backfield with two players. Did it with Reggie Bush. Did it with Darren Sproles. So I think his numbers, again, at the end will be there. They need to just be able to play a little defense here to keep that offense on the field. You know, you knew this weekend was going to be a shootout. I didn't expect much out of him, but I figured coming from behind, maybe he'll have seven or eight catches. You know, here, who knows? You're right. It's crystal ball stuff. Kamara and him, I think, will coexist, and I think Peterson will just kind of fade away.
Let me ask you this, too, because I think this is piggybacks on that point there. If I was to ask you what the percentage chance is of Adrian Peterson being wearing a Saints uniform at the end of the season or, you know, being cut or traded or on another team, what's the percentage chance that he ends this season as a Saint?
I think it's probably 25%, and wow. I could see them – my opinion, I could see them spinning it in such a way, the team is going nowhere, we're going to let him maybe sign on somewhere else, so on and so forth, and cut him adrift.
Let's get back to your roster that's in the top 15 right now. And I could have been wrong, but when I glanced at it before, I didn't see that you had made any changes to this roster. Now, maybe you snuck a...
Nope, you are no right. Change? I did not okay. make any change.
None. So no changes to this roster yet. I'm curious, has there just... not been a free agent in this league that you think has been worth what he's gone for in the blind bidding? Or are you purposefully saving this blind budget for bigger name free agents as the season unfolds?
You know, here, you go out, you see these drafts, you know, daily. There's very little that gets by owners these days. And guys are drafting the second and the third and the fourth backup to a particular position. Even when I was in Vegas, there were a couple guys that got drafted. I had to lean over to the guy next to me and go, who is that guy? I don't even know. I swear, honest to God, they're like, oh, that's the backup to the backup. So honestly, I kind of try and save my money for bye weeks when injuries start to happen. That's what I think is important, to use those dollars, because, you know, you get into that, the dog days of that season, when you have six teams off and you're short a running back and a wide receiver, or, you know, you have a guy that's questionable. I like to be able to know that I'm going to fill in the rosters with guys. Unless, of course, here, last week, we all know that Eddie Lacy can't push himself away from the buffet table. We know that Thomas Rawls is what he is. He's an injury-prone guy. If Chris Carson was available, sure, I would have spent money on him because it would have made sense. That in my crystal ball would have said Pete Carroll would give this guy a chance. But, again, he was drafted in round 18 or something of my draft, and that's the way it goes. But, you know, so I like to use my money for bye weeks.
You know, getting back to the injury aspect and drafting these, you know, the backups to the backups, the guy behind the guy, essentially, every year it seems like this time of year we hear people say, oh, I can't remember a year where there's been more injuries to big-name players. I can't remember a year in fantasy where the injuries have been worse. And I haven't heard it a ton this year, but I have heard it again. Do you think, as we enter week three of the NFL season, have the injuries been worse than they have the last few years? Obviously, you think of, you know, David Johnson and Greg Olsen, Corey Coleman's another one, you know, more that I'm leaving out as well. But you think about the injuries that we've seen so far this year. Is this out of the ordinary, or is this par for the course as far as...
No, it's par for the course. It's par for the course. I mean, you know, this is week two. It's a violent sport. It's a physical game. It takes time. I mean, it's gonna knock guys out. You just hope that that you weather the storm well enough. You're right. Imagine if you drafted David Johnson and Allen Robinson and Corey Coleman, you'd be sitting there decimated. You're probably done, quite frankly. Your team's done 2 weeks into the season. So, no, every year there's bad injuries, and, you know, that just gets exasperated by the fact that now you have so many. Now, I will say, I'll flip that a little bit, and so as much as you have injuries, the game has changed. When I started doing this in 2002, high stakes, the first round was all running backs because they were all bell cows. Now you have, what, four bell cows, and everyone else is a part-time player. So I would argue that your talent pool of players has opened up a lot greater because a lot of teams you can play two running backs from that same team. You know, and you never really had that. You had one guy that ran the ball, and that was it. So, you know, again, it's roster management. But, yeah, injuries will be there. They'll be there more. You're going to have concussion protocols. I mean, it's going to get more. It's more and more difficult as the game gets – as the players get more commoditized.
Yeah, no, totally great point on that. I know, like, I had David Johnson in two leagues this year, and I think in one of them I'm actually, like, you know, my optimal lineup now is my two running backs are Mike Gillisley and James White, which – honestly, is not that great, but I mean it's been working out so far because Gillisley's been getting in the end zone and James White keeps catching passes. But I think
exactly
you're right.
Correct.
When you're talking about you know this the evolution of how we draft players and how we attack the strategy, especially in high stakes fantasy football, it has changed because the pool is deeper because players have become more specialized. Now I think we're on the cusp. I don't think we're there yet, and I don't think we'll be there for another couple of years. But I think we're on the cusp of these NFL head coaches and GMs wanting to have one guy out there who can do it all. Because right now you have these specialized players, and the defense kind of knows what is going to be happening on a specific play when this running back's back there. When this running back's back there, we know it's going to be a run. When this running back's back there, it's probably going to be a pat. You know what I mean? And I think the more of a guessing game that you have, when you can have a guy who can play all three downs, all of a sudden now you're back to the bell cow status, and now these guys that, you know, we're getting back to the old, Larry Johnson, Priest Holmes days.
That's right.
Ben Tate, Arian Foster. I mean, that kind of thing. I don't think we're there yet, but I think the league might be actually shifting to go that way again.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, I mean, Kareem Hunt, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette, it seems, David Johnson, all these guys are three down backs, every one of them.
It's going to be interesting to see how, you know, because teams will speak where the money goes and how they treat free agency, how they treat the NFL draft. That's a storyline that we'll be paying attention to definitely in the offseason over the next couple of years. Let's get back to fantasy. I want to talk about, people always talk about streaming players, quarterbacks, tight ends, whatever. What about defenses for you, Don? Are you a fan of picking guys off the waiver, defensive units off the waiver wire in plum matchups and trying to exploit them that week? Or are you more of a, I want like a top five, top six defense and try to roll with them every single week I can?
Honestly, the way I pick defenses is very simple. I go to my schedule, and obviously you're going to look at a team that gets to play the Bears or the Jets, okay? So you're going to look at those divisions first, but if I have a team that's off week 9 or 10 and they're a decent defense, that's who I want. Because the last thing I want to think about during a season is, should I pick up this defense because it might be a 2-point or 3-point differential in a given week? I don't even worry about it. I just want the furthest bye week I have. I plug them in there every week, and I just don't worry about it. And that's generally the way I play them.
We are past draft season, so there's not going to be any more drafts, but the waiver wire in picking up these free agents is going to be crucial. That, along with the start-to-sit decisions, is going to decide who wins this $250,000 in the main event. So when it comes to blind bidding and getting these free agents off the waiver wire, Don, you obviously have seen what has happened in your league because you haven't picked up anybody yet. Rolling with your original drafted roster, you've seen what these teams are doing, not necessarily for this specific league, but what's one thing that high-stakes players, both, you know, veteran high-stakes players, accomplished ones, and players that are new to playing at this level of competition, what do you think, what's one thing they continue to get wrong when it comes to bidding on the waiver wire?
You know, I think early in the season you fall in love with guys, and you know, you spend $999 out of your thousand, and you say, yeah, well, I'm covered everywhere else. You're covered until you're not. I mean, it's like I hear in business, in my world. Yeah, well, this bond is perfect unless this happens. And inevitably, this always happens. So I think guys, just budget-wise, they either blow their money way too fast. And by the way, I'm guilty of it. Either blow your money way too fast, or probably in my case, you know what, I think I'm going to take it with me into the next season. I mean, it's just, you know, spend your money, try and spend it wisely, pay attention to what the other teams have spent. I don't know how many times I've looked at a sheet, and maybe a guy has, everyone in the league has $300 left, and a guy goes and spends $700 on a player. I'm like, what are you doing? All you got to do is spend $301. It's like the old Price is Right. $1 more, you get it, you know? So, you know, it's the same thing. It's dollars. It's an inexact science. There's no way around it. You know, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to be rock stars at some point. And that's it. You know, there's a lot of luck involved to it.
Let's get back to your biggest win. At least I think your biggest win. Maybe you've had something bigger. But 2010, go back 7 years to the FFPC main event. You end up winning that contest, $75,000 grand prize back then. It's a little bit more now, so obviously a little bit more lucrative, and best wishes to you to win it this year. But $75,000 back in 2010 was certainly awesome. And you won it, and this is something I bring up on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour all the time. You won it in Week 16, starting Dante Rosario as your tight end in a tight end premium league. Tell us what you remember about that situation sort of unfolding those in that three-week championship sprint, and really what you remember, what happened with so much on the line.
I remember using a button where you'd have to use the bleep button when I saw that my tight end had gone out. In fact, I can tell you, I had drafted Owen Daniels pretty early, maybe a fifth or a sixth round selection. And he was doing really well for 8 or 9 or 10 weeks, and then he got hurt. And I can't remember who my backup was, but I played him up until like week 12, and then he got hurt. And I remember one night, and I sat and I went through literally every roster looking for a tight end for the three-week stretch. And Dante Rosario was like the best choice because I knew he was going to at least dress and play in the games. And that's how I ended up on him. But, I mean, my season didn't start that way. I did put a pretty lucrative price tag on Owen Daniels to start, who just happened to get hurt. There was no way around it.
Historically speaking, there's probably some people when they hear that and say, oh, I don't need to invest in a tight end in the FFPC. It's a gimmick. You know, I'll just load up on all the running backs and receivers that are going to fall to me here, and I'll just pick up whatever tight end and plug them in. How, you know, that may not be necessarily how you feel, but how do you normally treat tight ends in the FFPC, Don? Knowing that you won 75 grand with Dante Rosario.
Again, I treat tight ends the same way I do running backs, wide receivers, any other position. It's a premium spot. There's only X number of them. I have to play them. And since I don't know how the season's going to play out, what if I have two tight ends that have 95 catches? Well, that works out to be 140-some catches. That's better. That's a number one pick. That's Antonio Brown-type numbers. So, you know, again, it's value drafting. In one league I did, I happen to have Gronkowski and Kelsey. You know, another league, I have Zach Ertz only. I mean, so it all depends on where these guys fall in the draft. I'm not against them. Like I said, I think the biggest mistake guys make is they always go in with a certain strategy and they don't deviate from it. And maybe that's good enough to get them to cash a check. But I don't think you can win big money being rigid in a strategy because you don't know how anyone else is going to draft or how the season's going to play out. You just don't know.
You don't, and that's part of the madness and or the maddening part of it, and also the very fun part of it too, as well is the unknown. I'm curious, are you trying to replace Greg Olsen on any of your teams this week? If you had him on any of your leagues, are you looking at dropping him right now that he's been placed on IR by Carolina? And where do you start trying to replace a guy like that in your lineup?
Well, you know, usually my drafting requires, or the way I draft is I usually draft two tight ends, and then I'll draft one flyer, who this year happens to be A.J. Derby, who may or may not be anything, who knows. Will I keep Greg Olsen? No, I cut him. He's gone 8 weeks. It's week 11. I can revisit that in week 8. If I'm in it, if I have extra money, I can go back and get him. But the roster spots, especially when you get to bye weeks, are just at a premium, and I can't let him sit there. Where do you begin looking? Honestly, suddenly that's where I shift the strategy, where I might keep a guy, that third receiver on a team, not the third, but the backup guy, I might cut him and pick up another tight end, a backup tight end. You're rolling the dice. It's a lottery ticket. Let's call it what it is. It's a lottery ticket. And yeah. You hope that that guy becomes the guy.
Yeah, and especially, too, you think about how many tight ends are already rostered. And the problem, honestly, the problem comes into the fact of if you are drafting in an FFPC league, and this is what you kind of got to battle against, and hindsight's 20/20. But if you want to get an elite tight end early, that's fine. If it happens to be Olsen, well, hopefully you got a semi-decent backup, because if he does go down, there are just not that many tight ends sitting out on the waiver wire in tight end premium leagues. And that's where the issue is. And I think that you do need to buy yourself some depth at the draft. I think what you're saying, too, is getting two tight ends and then trying to get that flyer late. That'd be the strategy I would employ in tight end premium leagues. Like
yeah, and this year, and this year, I even took an extra one. I took the second-round draft pick on the Bears, Adam Shaheen, because, you know, and that team's 0-9. You know, I don't know why they'd be playing Zach Miller. Let's see what the kid's got, and I think that's what you'll see. You know, that position's no different than a quarterback. At some point, Trubisky will begin and all these guys. So let's see what they got.
You know, I'm curious. I should ask you about the Bears, too, Don. Where's the fantasy value as far as receivers go on that team right now? Is it Kendall Wright? Is it somebody else? Is there any value that you can be looking at acquiring?
I could not even begin to fathom. In fact, I would say if you ask fantasy players in Chicago, not just Bear fans, who are the starting wide receivers on the Bears, I think you'd be hard-pressed to really get the answers right.
It's unfortunate, too, because you had, Cameron Meredith, who a lot of people loved as like a number three, number four receiver, high upside number three, number four receiver, who had just that breakout campaign last year. And then you had Kevin White, who people thought was finally, you know, he's going to have this breakout season. He's fully healthy. He goes on IR. Meredith goes on IR. You know, you're having all these issues there. The guy that I think is interesting and is Kendall Wright because of his ability. His experience and his ability to just simply catch the ball. I mean, this is what he's done everywhere he's gone. He's been a successful receiver, and I think he can pile up points in PPR. But you're right, man. It's going to be interesting week to week. And Tariq Cohen, honestly, might be the best of the lot there.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, if I have to rely on Mike Glennon throwing the ball to Kendall Wright to win my league, boy, that's a challenge.
It certainly is. Listen, Don, this has been a lot of fun. One last question before we let you go here. An early round, we're 2 weeks in, an early round stud that you have some red flags about right now that you would actually start to consider sitting, because of matchups or underperformance or what have you. An early round stud there. And then a player that is on the waiver wire in FFPC this week that you're going to take a hard look at and try to acquire on your teams.
Kind of crazy. The guys that I disliked early and I stayed away from them across the board, not a Shady McCoy guy, not a DeMarco Murray guy, and not a Jordan Howard guy. I don't have them in a league anywhere. Nowhere. Totally avoided them. Shady McCoy never looks easy, and he's always hurt. You know, DeMarco Murray's got mileage on him, and Howard, sell me another year. You know, I'm just not there. As far as the young guys, I'll go to my Chris Carson theory. I watched the game last night, and I'm watching this guy run the ball called Paul Pierce. I guess that's his name. And is it Pierce? Is that his name?
For the Giants?
Yeah.
Paul Perkins.
Paul Perkins, yeah. Pierce is the basketball player.
Yeah, he is.
I'm watching Paul Perkins, and I'm saying to myself, this guy is awful. He's just awful. So I would sit there before the guy gets a job. I would go and take a shot on like Orleans Darkwa if he's available in the league. You can probably get him really cheap. See what he's got. If he blows up, you're going to need you'll have a nice player. And if he stinks, you know what? Next week you drop him and you try another ticket.
It's all about trying to repeat the process until you get it right.
Also go, here's a real deep flyer, Jacob Hollister, backup tight end, New England Patriots.
And that's interesting too, because I mean, like we haven't. I mean, I think Gronk's going to be okay, but even if he makes it through this, Don, maybe the next injury for him is just around the corner.
Could be, and you know what? Dwayne Allen stinks. Yeah. So at the end of the day, you know, I hope Dwayne Allen, if you're listening, I'm sorry, man. I call it the way I see it. Whatever. You know, so Hollister, he's a straight line speed guy, cannot block at all. They won't have him to block. They'll have him run fly patterns.
I will be sure to forward Dwayne Allen's hate mail to this show to you to make sure that you take a look at it.
Perfect.
Don, thanks so much for joining the High Stakes Lowdown this week. I certainly appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way. You certainly got not just one, but two teams right up there for the main event. So hopefully we're talking to you again after a big victory this year. Good luck,
man. Balky, it's always a pleasure, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.